But before we start, several people have asked me to repeat something I'm going to repeat for you here. They asked me to repeat the list of chapters. Let's see if I wrote it down somewhere. The list of chapters that I mentioned in one of my messages that I thought people ought to start by reading those chapters in the Bible gives you the gist of the whole Bible. If you just read those 15 chapters, you'll get the whole idea, or a lot of the idea. And it's really not exhaustive. It's not complete. But this was my suggestion here, so I'm going to list them out for you. The first one is Genesis 1. That's the chapter on creation. Second one is Genesis 22. That's where Abraham sacrifices Isaac. The third one is Exodus 12. That's the Passover. Fourth one is Exodus 20. That's the giving of the law at Sinai, the Ten Commandments. The fifth one is 1 Samuel 17. That's David and Goliath. Sixth is Psalm 51. That's the Psalm of Repentance. Psalm 103 is number 7. That's the Psalm of Blessing. Proverbs 31. That's the virtuous woman. Number 9, Isaiah 53, man of sorrows. Number 10, Matthew 5, the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. Number 11 is Luke 15, parables about what causes joy in heaven. That's the prodigal son. The 12th is Luke 23. That's the Passion of Christ. There's many places where the Passion of Christ is, and it's not just in Luke 23. It's also Resurrection in Luke 24. It's a lot of them, but get that one in. Luke 23 gives an awful lot about the Passion of Christ. 13 is 1 Corinthians 13. That's the chapter on charity. 14 is Hebrews 11. That's the chapter on faith, the roll call of faith. And 15 is Revelation 22. That's eternity. I suggest to people that they read those chapters if they want to start reading the Bible instead of just reading. We used to just say, read the book of John, and then we'd answer questions, whatever. But I just want to get people interested in the Bible, and I'm telling you, those chapters are really interesting. So anyway, if you would, you can look those up and read them, and suggest to your friends that they would read those also, and see if they can get interested in the Bible. Seriously, if you get interested in the Bible, and it took a while for me to really get interested. I blame my parents, because when I would get in trouble, they would make me write out the Bible as a punishment. And they thought that was really innovative and wonderful. But I would suggest to you as parents not to use the Bible as punishment, but get interested in the Bible. Get interested in the Bible, and wow, it'll blow you away. It's the best literature ever written. Even if it weren't the inspired Word of God, it's still the best literature ever written. But on top of that, telling you the mind of God, God putting His mind out there through the Scriptures, wow. Well, you just can't beat that. Now, I said I was going to read in 1 Chronicles chapter 5 and verse 1. Let me introduce this just for a second. I've been doing a series called Unapologetics, and I got tired of it. So we're going to change. We're going to change gears, go into something else. I'm going to list out a number of people, and I want you to think about them and find out what they all have in common. Lot, Abraham's nephew. Judah, son of Jacob. Jonathan, son of Saul, King Saul. Absalom, son of David, heir to the throne at that time. Joab, nephew to David. Jeroboam, he was a thorn in the side of Solomon. Apollos, John the Baptist, Silas, Luke, Barnabas, Rahab, Hannah, Ruth, and Salome. What do they have in common?
They're all people. That's a good point.
They're all people, he said. This is true, they are all people. Say it again. Who said something? The lineage. Nope. You're wrong! No. What they have in common is that they are not the protagonist of the story. They're not the main character. These are the supporting cast, secondary characters that a lot of times get overlooked, but they're very important to the story. They really make a difference. Now, there's no way I'm going to be able to study all of these secondary characters, this supporting cast, but I do want to deal with some of the characters in the Bible that we overlook. And all of these characters to me are just fascinating. The Bible gives you enough information about them that they just blows you away. And there's many more. I could have mentioned Mordecai and Mephibosheth, and there's just many, many more. I won't even get to all those that I read. I just wanted to give you an idea of how many times the Bible brings somebody in and they are a vital part of the story, but they're not the one you focus on because the story is really about somebody else. And yet, if you overlook that part of the story, you miss out on something important. Today, I want to deal with Judah. Judah was a son of Jacob. Look at 1 Chronicles, chapter 5, verse 1. Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but forasmuch as he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given unto the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel. And the genealogy is not to be reckoned after the birthright. For Judah prevailed above his brethren, and of him came the chief ruler. But the birthright was Joseph's. Now there's a lot of information right there. And you go back and you read the stories about Joseph and Judah and even other stories that about the birthright and the blessing. And here it mentions the genealogy and the chief ruler. What are we talking about? It's just like, are you kidding me? Somehow, but this verse here, this couple of verses here, sort of put together a lot of things that happened in Genesis and put it together for us, trying for us to understand the way God was thinking. And because he had a difference in the way he treated birthright and the way he treated the blessing and the way he treated the genealogy or from him coming the chief, deciding, dividing, saying, no, not this one, not that one. Has it ever crossed your mind how many times, especially in the book of Genesis, the second son was the important son? Now, Judah was the fourth son, and I don't know if there's anything special about a fourth son. In fact, I don't even know that he was the fourth son for sure, absolutely, because some of the other ones might have been born in between, but in the list of how they come in the book of Genesis, he was at least the fourth. He was the fourth son of Leah. And fourth son, I don't know about, but many times the second son, this was always important to me because I was a second son. And it was clear to me from the time I was young that God loves the second son more than he loves the first son. Anyway, firstborn gets all the glory in their culture. Firstborn was more important. He got at least a double inheritance, double what anybody else got. And sometimes it appears that toward the time of the New Testament, the firstborn was getting all of the inheritance and all the other sons were getting gifts. And that's significant because over there in Luke 15, we have the second son says, give me the portion of my inheritance. The truth is he wasn't the firstborn, so he was not going to get a major amount. He was not going to be able to run his father's business. He wasn't going to be dividing equally. And so he was just maybe a little bit discouraged about his position in life. He was just the second son, so he was going to be getting a little bit of money and sent off. And he says, well, I'm ready now, Dad. Don't wait till you die. Give me the money now. And maybe he was just a little bit, rebellious and what have you. And no, I'm not going to teach this Sunday school lesson on the prodigal son. But it's just the idea that God has made a difference in who he chose for these special blessings. And he has, by the way, folks, if you didn't get that one special blessing that you were hoping for, hang in there. God's got a lot of special blessings. God hasn't, just because you didn't get that one thing you're focused on, doesn't mean God hadn't given you anything. God's got tremendous amount of blessings. How many times he says, like he tells David, I could have given you more than I gave you. I had a lot more. God's rich beyond our imagination. And so if you haven't, you're not getting that special thing that you want. You're praying to God, oh God, I want this, I want this. And you're not getting it. You ought to stop and think, well then God, what do you have for me? Don't be envious of somebody else because they've got something. Man, God's got something for you too. And I'm telling you, it's good. It is good. Don't give up on the Lord in that way. Anyway, it makes here a point in First Chronicles chapter 5. It talks about a birthright. And if you remember those second sons in the book of Genesis, you've got Isaac was the second son of Abraham, firstborn by the time he cast out the bondwoman and her son. When he did that, at God's instruction, even though it broke his heart, then Isaac becomes the firstborn, but the firstborn was Ishmael. So the firstborn son in their culture would have been Ishmael. And then Abraham chose, because of God and his wife, Sarah, because of their insistence, he cast out the bondwoman and her son, and Isaac became the firstborn. And at the time, over there in Hebrews, it says he was his only begotten son at that time. So the only son he had with him that was begotten of him was Isaac's. But Isaac, being the second son, got the preeminent place. And then, of course, you know, Isaac had Jacob and Esau. And which one was the firstborn? Well, Jacob was the secondborn. Jacob was the secondary one. And he bought the birthright from Esau, which is very interesting. And then he stole the blessing. And Esau says, these two times my brother has shafted me. Now I'm going to kill him. You see how that works out? Second one, you notice that Judah had two sons from this one, and Tamar. And the first one was Hezron, and the second one was Perez. But Perez got the position because something happened in birth. I don't know how that happened, but he stuck his hand out and they put the string on him, and he pulled his hand back in and the other one came out. Boy, those were some healthy women, I can tell you. I don't know how that works. But anyway, many, many times you find that the second son is the one that is blessed by God. Now, maybe that's just God evening the score ever so often, and that's fine, because firstborn sons were always the son of the right hand, the most important point. And when God killed all the firstborn of Egypt, he didn't just kill a lot of people. He cut them off at the legs. He took away their firstborn, the one that had been given all of the extra special attention, all of the extra teaching, all of the extra preparation, all of the stuff. All the other sons were more like servants. The firstborn was the one that got all of the importance. And when God killed all of them, boy, he took away their leadership. He took away a lot of stuff from them on that one moment. So, just to let you know, God is jumbling some things according to his will. And it's not just about a birthright, because that has something to do with here, but it also is about what he calls here the genealogy. And I want you to notice that the Old Testament is focused on a genealogy. The genealogy is Christ's genealogy. You find that the characters in the Old Testament that are coming apart, that are preeminent, you find that they have something to do with the genealogy of Christ. Over there in Hebrews, it says that the whole volume of the book was written about Jesus. The whole volume of the book was written about Jesus. And it's true. If you really stop and think about it, well, all the stuff it talks about in Genesis, it's talking about Jesus. It's talking about the genealogy. And here in 1 Chronicles chapter 5, they make that point. By that time, they understood what was going on. And they said, the genealogy is not reckoned after the birthright. So the birthright was one blessing. And Jacob bought that. A little bit, a little bit of a scam, but, you know, not quite above the table, but he did buy it from Esau when Esau was in trouble. And then he stole the blessing. And I'm assuming that that blessing has to do with this special blessing. God has decided I'm going to be setting up a genealogy. And from this genealogy is going to come the Messiah, the Christ, the ruler of Israel. And so it says here in verse 2 of 1 Chronicles chapter 5, it says Judah prevailed above his brethren, and of him came the chief ruler. But the birthright was Joseph's. Now, why is this even important? The genealogy seems to make sense. I'm not sure why the birthright makes any sense. What I've noticed is that the Bible is full of metaphors. It's not just a simple story. Everything is amazing. It's deeper than you can guess. And you think you've got it figured out, but sooner or later somebody's going to point out something that they've seen, and it will just floor you. You'll say, man, I've read that chapter hundreds of times, and I never did notice that. That's what's going to happen if you start reading the Bible, especially the book of Genesis. The book of Genesis is a full book. I can't even imagine any other book that could compare in importance to the book of Genesis, unless it's the book of Matthew, because of the Sermon on the Mount in history. The book of Genesis is what lays it all out for us. And it's also one of the best pieces of literature ever written. It outshines Shakespeare like the sun outshines the moon. This is just, it's a tremendous story. I can't hardly read the book without coming to tears as I'm reading it, especially this story of Joseph and all this stuff that's happening. This is a tremendous book. Not only that, it has been scrutinized. And I've done my own scrutinizing of this book over and over, going back, checking back, cross-referencing, trying to find out years and what have you. And I'm telling you, this book is full of details that there's just no way somebody writing a story would have any way of knowing. It's full of those details, and all of the dates and all of the time periods, they all match. And sometimes these things will just blow you away when you do the investigation. You scrutinize these stories, and it will blow you away at what actually happened. Let's talk about a few of them. Go back to Genesis chapter 29, and we're going to read. There's no possibility that I can finish this study that I have prepared today on Judah. I just don't see how it is. I'm so long-winded, and Danny took some of my time up. So, it was good, Danny. I appreciate that. That was good. It was good. Just don't take up my time, bud. Genesis 29. Let's look at Genesis 29, and let's look at. Let's see. Yeah, there it is. It's verse 31. Genesis 29, verse 31. And when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb. Now, this means God gave her a special fertility. This woman was fertile. Let me explain to you what happens here. Laban is in Paddan Aram with his mother's brother. And he falls in love with Rachel, the younger daughter of Laban. And wow, he says, look, I'll stay with you and I'll work for you. I'll do all your work out there. I'll take care of all your flocks and everything else and I'll do that for 7 years if you'll give me Rachel to wife. And he says, that's a deal. But then on the wedding night, Laban gives the older daughter to him and he consummates the marriage that night without knowing who it is. Now, I don't know how that works. I guess if anything, it should tell you not to drink on your wedding night. You need to be sober. If you're marrying one of Laban's daughters, at least, for sure. Anyway, he wakes up and it's the wrong one. So he says, well, this is not right. This is not fair. I didn't work for her. And Laban, you know, he's a slick guy. And he says, hey, that's all right. Just give her 2 weeks. Spend your time with her for 2 weeks. Give her honeymoon. And then I'll give you Rachel. And then you can work for me another 7 years for Rachel. I mean, or for Leah, whichever one. Anyway, so what happened was the first 7 years, he was there in Paddan Aram for 20 years while Esau hated him, giving Esau time to cool off. And so he's there away from Esau. He's in Paddan Aram and with Laban. And he worked 7 years just hoping to get married and get this thing taken care of. And he does. And then he's married to two women and has two servant ladies given to him also, which become his concubines. So he has four wives, and in the next 7 years, he has 12 sons and one daughter. That's in 7 years. Now, stop and think about this. Leah, in those 7 years, had seven children. That's one per year. In case you're rough on math. I'm just not sure, but, this generation is a little rough on math, I can tell you that. Now, there's a possibility because every single time it says that Leah conceived again. It says after this she conceived again. It says that every time except for Dinah's. So it's possible that Dinah, she was the last one born. It says so. After this, it says she bare also Dinah. But it doesn't say conceived again, so it's entirely possible that Dinah was the twin sister of Zebulun, Leah's last child. Okay, and so, but we have at least six births recorded in 7 years. And these six sons is Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun, and then Dinah. And it's possible that two of those were twins. So, but stop and think about it. He opened up her womb. This woman was fertile. I deal with dates and brothers and sisters in my work because I keep a database. I have to keep a database of all the people that I interpret for, and so I know their brothers and their sisters and what have you. And I have to know their birth dates because we have to know who we're talking about. And they're always asking the birth dates, and so I got to have all these things at hand memorized, and so. I do that studying on these lists, and I'm always noticing, and I've noticed quite a few children that are born within a year of each other. I haven't found one less than 11 months. My brother and I were born 13 and a half months apart. So this is not impossible. This is, if God opened her womb, he gives her 7 children in 6 years. And I don't know why, but it was really important to women back then to have lots of children. I'm not sure what the idea is, but apparently that was a big deal to the women because that's what gave them status in their culture. And so Leah, God saw that she was hated, that Jacob did not like her. Now I don't know why. He says she was tender-eyed. I guess that meant she was a little bit ugly or plain or whatever. I'm not sure exactly, but something about it, he didn't like her for some reason, and God noticed that. And so he just gave her a blessing. Have you noticed that about God, that you got some problems and then he just gives you blessings on the side, and you think, maybe the problem was worth it, folks. Maybe it was worth it that God give you these blessings. You can complain against God too quickly. You ought to just take your time and let God have his perfect work. He's doing something amazing. All right. Just don't want you to notice there, those are the first four that were born in 31 through 35, verse 35, and she conceived again and bare a son, and she said, now will I praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah and left bearing. The name Judah means praise. She praised God and she named Judah after praise. Now, well, let's go to the next one. I'll show you. Look at verse 22 of chapter 30. The next page, Genesis 30 and verse 22. Right after Dinah was born, it says, and God remembered Rachel, and God hearkened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bare a son and said, God hath taken away my reproach. And she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. I don't know if that's prophesying Benjamin or if that's, she's just talking about Joseph right there. And it came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said unto Laban, send me away that I may go unto mine own place. In another place, Joseph is called the son of his old age, which apparently was also in their culture. The last son born was a special thing too. And so I just want you to notice that Joseph was born before the 7 year period was up. Because after he was born, Jacob says, okay, now I'm done. I've done my 14 years, and I'm going to go back to my hometown. And Laban talks him into staying this time to gain some economic wealth. He says, stay with me. And Jacob says, the only way I'll stay with you is if I can start increasing my own herds and what have you. And he says, I know the business. I've been taking care of all your cattle, and I'll stay with you. But anything that's spotted or colored or ring strake, you know, it's got stripes in it, any kind of animal that's a little bit off, those are going to be mine, and you guys can keep all the solid colored ones and all those. And boy, Laban said, yeah, I like that idea, and didn't realize that Jacob was pretty good at breeding, and he bred them all. He wouldn't even put in the colored, solid colored ones. He bred them all to come out ring strake and everything else, and after a while, the entire herd belonged to Jacob. And that caused Laban's sons to be angry at Jacob. Anyway, I just wanted you to see that these 12 children were born within 7 years. You used to do the study, they were born within 7 years. That means that Judah, who could not have been born earlier than, say, 3 or 4 years after that 7 year period started, he could not have been more than 3 years older than Joseph. We're not talking about a huge difference. We're talking about Judah being the fourth born, which is nothing special. Nothing special. And Joseph being the last born, the son of the old age, being treated really, really good. Also the son of his favorite wife, Rachel. Something about it. And they're only like 3 years apart. So you're getting the idea here between Judah and Joseph. Now, we had a problem here. Look at Genesis 37, verse 2. Let's go ahead and read verse 1. Just doesn't make sense to start at verse 2. And Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah. Those are the two concubines, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Now, apparently they were divided up into Leah's sons and the sons of the concubine and Joseph. So that's how they divided up in their work. And Joseph's with these concubine sons. And now there's some evil report going on. And Joseph comes back and he's telling his dad these evil reports. Apparently, Joseph and Jacob were really close. And I don't think it's just because Jacob was prejudiced or biased against them, the others. I think that Joseph had a very good disposition, a good character. I think he was just a good kid. And you know how good kids are despised by the bad kids. Bad kids are also despised by the good kids, too. I have that on personal knowledge. So, there was a problem. There was a problem. We keep reading 37. Let's read a few more just to get the notice here. By the way, this is just fantastic literature. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children. Why? Because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. And remember, Reuben is no more than 6 years or 7 years, no more than 6 years older than Joseph. We're talking about not a big span. These are all more or less the same age. Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it his brethren. By the way, you don't have to tell everything you know. A fool uttereth all his mind. A wise man keepeth it in till afterwards. Right? You sometimes discretion is wise. Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, "Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed." He should have gotten a clue that all those rolling eyes, you know, as they were rolling their eyes. "For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. Then behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf." And his brethren said to him, "Shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us?" And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. And he dreamed yet another dream, and told it his brethren, and said, "Behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me." And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, "What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth?" And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. Now, there's several points in here that it says why they hated him. I think the first reason why they hated him is because their father loved him and overtly loved him more, gave him a coat of many colors. And listen, folks, I realize that all of us like certain people more than we like others. And I don't think that's wrong. I don't think it's wrong for you to have a BFF, you know. Any man in here has a BFF, we're going to check your credentials at the door. But just don't call him your BFF, right? But we all get along with some people more than we get along with others. So it makes perfect sense that a dad might really get along with one of his children more than he gets along with the others. I don't think we can blame him for having an affinity to Joseph. Joseph was a good kid. This was a good kid. He was a good young man. And he had a good communication with his dad. And his dad really liked him. And they liked to be together. And Rachel was his favorite wife. And so their family was together. He spent more time with Rachel. It makes it clear in the text that he spent a lot more time with Rachel than he did with the other wives. And so that's where the close-knit group was. And of course, then his siblings are going to be envious of him. They're going to be irritated at him, and they're going to dislike him. Of course, that makes perfect sense. But it doesn't, it is something to say against Jacob that he didn't recognize this and put a stop to it. He could have figured out that I'm not doing Joseph any favors by giving him a special coat. He should have given him a coat of just one color. Anything to soften it. You're not going to get rid of all the problems between siblings, but you could at least, you know, make it a little bit better. And it doesn't look to me like Joseph or that Jacob did. Anyway, another reason why you see it in verse 5, because he dreamed this dream of dominion, that he was going to have dominion over all the others. And he already was a sort of a tattletale, a goody two shoes, a little bit better than everybody else. And he had a real in with his dad, and he could always talk to his dad. And it doesn't look to me like he needed a lot of fellowship with his brothers, but he opened his mouth and said, I dreamed this dream. Guess what? Guess what? I'm going to reign over all of y'all. How about that? Man, it says they couldn't speak peaceably to him. They couldn't even say a nice word about him. Wow, this is bad stuff. And it's not just that he dreamed it and that they found out. It's that he told them.
Yes, right.
Now that's just a little bit arrogant. That's a little bit bragging. If you dream a dream like that where God says you're going to be above all your brethren, you might ought to be humble about it and just keep it to yourself. Maybe tell your dad or some close friend, maybe, so you can get, you know, maybe a little bit of understanding, or maybe you need some kind of fellowship, but don't be telling the people that already have a lot of reason to hate you. And you shouldn't hate them back just because they hate you, because, well, frankly, you're a little bit of a nerd. You're a little bit of a problem. And so, you know, and try to understand things from somebody else's point of view. He actually told them, and it says they hated him even the more, not just because of his dreams, but because of his words. He talked too much about himself. All of us could learn not to talk so much about ourselves. Let the conversation wander away from you once in a while. Man, that is good advice. All right. He also told, in verse 11 it says, he told his father about these dreams, and they envied him. Now think about it. He already has a problem that his father thinks of him more highly than he does of all the other, and he's telling on them, and so they're getting in trouble because of stuff that Joseph says, and that's another good reason to hate him. And they can't speak peaceably to him, and so he goes and tells his dad this thing, and his dad begins to observe it and think, oh, he starts noticing this Joseph is going to be really special, and starts even treating him more. Yeah, you know. Can you imagine how they would envy their brother that way? It's just, everything is working against Joseph. You know, it's good to be a good kid, but you also need to be wise and understand how this is going to affect other people. And you don't want to lose your brothers, even if they can't speak peaceably to you. You want to help them out. And if you're a father, you need to treat your children in a way where they're not going to hate each other. That would be way better. All right. Let's go down to Genesis 37. Let's skip on down to verse 26. I'll tell you another thing that you ought to consider here, and that is the danger of polygamy. There was a rivalry between these half-brothers. You notice that Leah's six brothers were really close. They liked each other. And you'll notice that the concubine kids were all together. And so there was a little bit of a rivalry between them. And this is what polygamy causes. They're actually talking right now about in the United States making it the Supreme Court having no precedent by which to stop polygamy when it happens. And the states are going to start opening that up so that polygamy can be legal. And boy, we've just stopped being a Christian nation in any sense at all if we can restart polygamy. Now, I don't know if polyandry is going to ever happen, but one way or the other, it's hard to find out how what legal sense they would have it. But I will tell you one thing, polygamy does not work. It's not better. And when Jesus says to those people who says that the wife has the right to divorce her husband for adultery, Jesus says this in Mark chapter 8, which is blow away kind of doctrine. This blows all those polygamous groups away. That the wife has the right to divorce the husband over adultery. Ha! Think about it, folks. That was much better. What Jesus gave us there was much, much better than all that they had had before. One of the problems here was the rivalry between half-brothers. And Joseph was the only son of Rachel, so he was left out of any. He didn't have anybody to take his side. So it's interesting there. Okay, verse 26. Judah says, boy, I'm skipping over a bunch. Never mind. Let's just talk about, says they went back to Shechem. You remember over there in chapter 34 when Dinah, more or less the same age as Joseph. So Joseph was 17 when he was sold. This happened a couple of years before that. She was 15 years old, more or less. And she liked to go out with the daughters of the lands. You know, she was alone as the daughter. She, I feel for her, but she went out there with these friends of hers from the neighborhood. And one of the chief princes there had a liking to her, and he liked her. And it says he defiled her. I know some people think that he might have raped her because it says that he defiled her, but it never says that he raped her. It looks to me like they just fornicated. This was a consensual thing, and she was seduced and deceived and got a little bit worldly and wound up being defiled sexually. And it got Simeon and Levi really mad. And but this was a rough group, I tell you. They went in there and killed that whole city of Shechem in the country of Shechem. They killed that whole city. They killed every man. And it made Jacob say, I got to get out of here. Because he realized, boy, they're going to come after me. And so they had to move. And they left Shechem. They left the country of Shechem and went, you know, to Bethel, then they went to Bethlehem, and then they finally wound up in Mamre, where Isaac was still alive. And they got over back over there, and they were sojourning in that area of Mamre, where Isaac was, and for quite a while. And it says that he would send his children with the flocks back to the country of Shechem to feed the flocks. So they were living far away, but they were somewhat furtively going back into Shechem and pasturing their flocks. So they get back over there, and Joseph wasn't with them. Joseph was the little houseboy that he got treated better, I guess, and he would take them provisions and bring back word. And Joseph was sent at this one time when he's 17, and he's sent out there to go take them some things. And they see him coming, and he's wearing his special coat. I don't know what it was, but he was a hippie. He had that coat of many colors. So he gets out there, and they see him far away, and they say, here he's coming. Here he's coming. Now what's this dreamer going to tell us now? And they were so angry at him, they were ready to kill him. They take him, and they take his coat away from him, and they drop him into this pit, and they wanted to kill him. And Reuben was thinking, hey, guys, we don't want to kill this. We don't want to kill this kid. This is a little bit too much, too far. But Reuben was weak as water. He couldn't persuade anybody. So he would tell them, no, no, let's not do this. Let's not do this. And they were going to kill him. Judah, though, he had a better way of telling them. He says, well, what's the point of killing him? We don't get any money out of killing him, but we could sell him to those Ishmaelites over there, and we get some money out of it. It'd be a profit. So Judah had a reason of profit to sell Joseph, and that's what it says they did here. Judah says in verse 26, said unto his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother, and conceal his blood. Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh, and his brethren were content. And they, and when they passed by, those Ishmaelites, they pulled him out. And it says over there later on, in I think Genesis 44, where the brethren are distraught over all the things that they had done, they finally hit in some real remorse. They said that he was in anguish and he was in tears. He was begging them, don't do this, don't do this. And they did, they disregarded his tears and his anguish, and they sold him as a slave to the Ishmaelites. And I've run out of time. Thanks a lot, Danny. But we'll take it up from there, and hopefully I'll finish this one next Sunday.
So you're saying we should take parenting advice from Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and the great parents?
I don't know if they were very great parents.